Hello, this is Joe Crisera.
And this is Rick Picard.
And welcome to the Hour of Sales Power. Rick, tonight's subject is positively exhilarating. We're going to talk about the subject of how to turn slow times into the good times. Now, Rick, you remember that TV show from the 1970s called The Good Times? Who was the main comedic character in that show? Remember that?
Well, I think I'm aging myself a little bit to say I do remember that. It was J.J. Walker.
Now, J.J. had a real famous saying. If you were part of the 1970s, we all remember this famous saying that J.J. had. And what was that famous saying, Rick?
You used to always say, dynamite.
Right. And so, Rick, I think that's what this meeting is all about. This meeting is about how to turn your lack of sales that are really a dud in the slow times into an explosive...
dynamite.
Attaboy. Hey, you're getting good at that... At the dynamite. We might have to send you to Las Vegas to become an impersonator or something like that. You're doing a great job.
Yeah, I think I could do it.
I look just like
J.J. Walker, don't I?
You gotta lose a few pounds, but you're right. You're very close, yes. So, nonetheless, Rick, turning slow times into good times. There is a cycle in the contracting industry, a perceived cycle, that some companies get slow during the spring and there's off-seasons, they would call it, right? Now, Rick, mentally, the off-season is something that's just a perception that we go through. Some companies do wind up staying busy because with the opportunities they have, they actually execute the opportunities. So, Rick, is it important that we focus on not having enough calls, or is it more important to focus on doing something with the calls we do have?
Oh, I think it's obvious that, you know, if you're not getting maybe 15 calls a week and you're getting only 5 calls a week, then you have to make sure that, number one, you're being responsible with those 5 calls and doing everything you can to close them. And number two, finding a way to try to find a way to get even more calls.
Rick, does a salesperson's activities, should they slow down during the slow times? Or would a salesperson be, would they be less active in their efforts to get more business when it's slower? Or should they be more active? What do you think the activity of a salesperson should be when it gets slow?
I think the activity and the quality of their calls should go higher, right? So there's things we'll talk about a little later on, I think, I'm sure, that we'll talk about how there are ways that the salesperson can make themselves more busy by doing some things that bring more productivity to the company.
So to be proactive and maybe think ahead, you can actually keep yourself busy. So a salesperson doesn't have to be a victim at this part of the year. They can be a sales champion, even if you don't have even 5 calls. If you have 3 calls for the week and you sold $10,000 on each call, you'd be doing pretty good. It would be a pretty good week by anybody's standards to keep the company busy, to keep the cash flow going, and that's the most important thing. Rick, the impact of the slow times, if the customer thinks that we're slow and they think that we are desperate for the work, how does that impact the negotiation that we have with them?
Well, we have to start that negotiation with that customer and really from a weakened position, right? If the customer feels, oh, these guys are slow, they have a slow off-season, and if he's going to get my work from me, he's going to really have to drop his price. You know what I mean? I guess the saying goes, the customer's going to feel like they're in the driver's seat. They're driving the bus, and if you want to be on the bus, you have to do it their way. So that's not really a very favorable position to be in, Joe.
Yeah, if you have to have something, you're probably not going to get it, right?
Right, and that's exactly right.
And so, Rick... Yeah, I remember you had a saying about the bad economy. You said that you refused to participate in the bad economy. Have you decided to not participate in the slow times as well?
Really, yes. I refuse to participate in this quote slow time that companies have. And, you know, and by making sure I continue to be more diligent with the program and the system that I've learned from you, Joe, I make sure I follow it even more now when it's slow. In those slow times than maybe in a busier time, right? So right. I make sure I'm even more diligent.
Yeah, I guess it would be looking at like almost like a baseball team that if it's the bottom of the ninth inning, you're down by 6 runs, you can either just swing very weakly and just strike out and get the game over and just let's go play tomorrow as opposed to doing what, Rick? What should a batter do when it's last of the ninth, the bottom of the ninth, and there's 2 outs and looks like there's no hope? Should he just give up and swing and get the game over?
Well, I guess I would want to say, you wouldn't want to take a swipe at it, right? You would want to take a nice, steady power stroke at it and get Wood on the ball and maybe get a hit or a double or maybe do enough to get a rally going and for the team.
Yeah, you could either be the last batter of the game or you could be the start of a rally. And there's been many times that you're a fan of the Boston Red Sox. They're famous for looking like they're dead and all of a sudden coming back in that ninth inning, right? You've seen that many times, many comebacks, right?
Many times. It's a very good example, Joe.
How about the New England Patriots? We shouldn't talk about them this year, though, right?
Hey, they did all right. They're 11-5. They still had a good season, but, you know, just not good enough. But
they could make that final comeback. It was a good season, but not by their standards. Well, anyway, Rick,
right.
I guess it comes down to putting a quality professional effort and working on the little things when it's slow to make sure that you're going to put on a good show for people, because this is showtime. And I guess, Rick, what it comes down to is that where do customers get this perception that we are slow? I mean, customers, to go into a negotiation, if a customer thinks that we're slow and we know it's not going to be productive, then who gives them the impression that we're slow to begin with?
Well, Joe, I think it's really three ways they get that perception, all right? I think the first way they get that perception is by the marketing and advertising campaigns that a lot of companies do, right? I mean, we've all, and maybe we've been all guilty of that in our own companies, right? Having preseason or postseason sales or liquidation, equipment liquidation sales or clearance sales. So a lot of times the message that we're sending out to the community in our advertising can really tell them that we're desperate for work in these slow times.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I sometimes find people doing is installers or technicians or people that are in the company themselves will talk and tell customers and tell them how slow we are or having layoff or that type of thing. So sometimes they can get it internally from people in the office. And worst of all, I think sometimes the third way is get it right from the salesperson themselves.
So you're actually saying a salesperson goes into this thing that we need the work, so we like to get your business, so we want to get this, keep our crew busy or something like that, they would say?
Right. You know, it's sometimes it's as obvious as that, right? They may actually come out and say that to a customer. As crazy as that sounds, they may do it. But also just as bad is they may project that to the customer just by the way they're acting. And so sometimes you can say something without saying it, right, Joe?
I guess that your actions speak louder than words, Rick. It was a good way of putting that. And
right.
I guess it's important, ultimately it's important to not show what's behind the curtain, because your presentation is like showtime, and it's got to excite the customer and create urgency, right? And if you're
right.
If you're showing people behind the curtain what's going on before the show loses a lot of enthusiasm by the audience. They've already seen it before, so what am I, I'm not being surprised. Most of a good show, is kind of the surprise element or the delight that you get from being surprised, I would say.
I think you're right. And also, being on time with your show, right? I mean, if you're too anxious to make a presentation, and if the show's supposed to start at 9 and you're starting the show at 8, there's no one in the audience yet, all right? So we have to make sure that our presentation is still on time. And we'll get a little bit more in about what the right time to make the presentation is.
Right. Now, you don't mean on time with getting the call on time. That's just a given. We're talking about
presenting
your solutions at the right time. That's a good idea.
Exactly right.
Rick, how can we shape the perceptions of creating scarcity? Because I guess one of the best ways I can think of to raise the amount of value in the customer's mind that our solution is value is by shaping the perception of scarcity that we don't need this business. Even though we do need it in our head, we don't want to reveal that to people because that kind of screws up our negotiation. So how can we shape that perception of scarcity when our first inclination is just tell the truth and spill
right.
our beans and let the customer know that we need the work?
Well, I think it goes back to the system that you teach, right, Joe? The very first step we have in that is the convincing step, right? So, I mean, if we're going to that call with a mindset that I need this guy back in the shop that need work, I got to close this call, we may tend to skip some steps. For instance, when, you know, the convincing step. So, say we go to a sales call, and right when we get to the customer says, well, I'm glad you came over today. We've been thinking about changing this furnace, and it's something we think we might do in the near future. Well, you know, if in your mind you're saying, I got to sell this job, you know, that's a big yellow flag that went up. It may even be a red flag, right? If you keep on proceeding forward and not following the system and getting the customer to convince you, well, chances are they're going to see you as being desperate, right?
So let's stop there for a second, Rick. So you're saying basically if somebody's ambivalent about moving forward when it's slow, one of the things you could do is just do what's called the trial of disqualification, right?
Exactly.
So let's right. try a little bit. I'll be a customer and you be the salesperson. I can see how it sounds when we
right.
do that. So go ahead, Rick. Ask me the first question. How you doing, Rick? Nice to meet you. Go ahead.
Hi, nice to meet you, Joe. So, Joe, let me ask you, what inspired you to have me out to the home today?
Well, we're just kind of looking into getting a new air conditioning system. We're really not sure what we're going to do yet, but we're just looking into it.
Oh, I see. You're just looking into it. You know, I'm sorry. I thought there was something that you were serious about getting moving forward with. So, you know, why don't we do this? If it's something you're not really in a position to do right now, why don't we schedule it for sometime in the future when you are able to do that? When do you think that would be?
Well, hang on for a second. Don't do that because we got to get this thing installed before it gets I don't want it to go to another hot season again. I got to get on the schedule soon because I don't want to have to, wait for this thing to be installed in the middle of June and have everybody swelter up in my attic. I want this thing to get installed right away. So, I mean, we got to move forward on this right now, Rick.
Okay,
I want to reschedule. I want to get this job done.
I'm just making sure because, you know, a minute ago you told me that you were just considering it. Now you're thinking you sound like you really want to do it, and I don't want to push you into something that you don't think yet that you're ready to do. So
it's okay. I think I misspoke myself. We definitely want to get this work done.
Oh, great. Okay, good.
Yes. So there you go. So you create that urgency by taking it away and say, why don't we reschedule if you're not... you're not serious about it, or now's not a good time, we can reschedule it. Kind of a trial disqualification, I call it, where you're not canceling the call, but you're maybe acting like you should cancel it, which then creates desire and interest. No, don't leave. I waited for you for 2 hours for you to show up today. I took off work for half a day. I don't want you to go away. Don't do that. So, again, that's one of the things you have in your favor is the perception of scarcity. Like, you're not all about moving forward. We got to see what's going on here first. And Rick, how effective is it to go into every negotiation having to say you have to go forward? Is that going to be an effective negotiation?
No, it's not really going to be effective if you feel you have to. You have to make sure that it's the right time and the right place and that it's the right situation to be moving forward.
So, Rick, shaping the perception of scarcity can happen a lot of different ways, like at the door with the convincing step, or even with people who are saying, like, I'm not sure if we really even need AC, you know, I'm not even sure if I really don't like air conditioning. They say things like that to you, kind of call yellow lights. That's another good time. Well, John, if you don't like air conditioning, why don't we go ahead and just cancel the call? I don't want to sell my services to somebody who doesn't need them. I'm not going to do that. You know, so we got to get it. My wife, she has emphysema. We have to get this, we got to get this thing installed. So again, to kind of shape that perception of scarcity, it's a salesperson's job to not act like you're desperate for the work, but to act like, I'm fine if we don't proceed. I'm good if I'm just here to see what's going on and see if you could use my services. If you don't need my services, by all means, let's just part ways and we won't do any damage to each other then at that point, right?
Right. So the point is, Joe, we should be doing that all the time anyway, right? We should be getting the customer to convince us, and we should be handling those objections, those yellow lights when they happen, whether it's busy or whether it's slow. All right?
Right,
so now is a better time for us, and it's slower, to make sure that it's even more important to do at that time, and maybe even to work on our skills of getting better at it. So really, a slow time is a time where you can really sharpen the sword, right, or sharpen ourselves to make sure we're getting better at following these practices, best standards and practices that we know we should be following.
So we should be doing this, but what is it, what kind of switch goes off in the technician or a customer's head? A salesperson's head that gives up that scarcity and they act desperate. What's the thing that drives this salesperson to want to tell people that we're desperate for work? What is it shaping that?
I think all of us who are salespeople have felt this, right? I feel a lot of it comes from internal pressure from maybe from the staff or from the company, right? You know, you can have the project manager or the owner or someone that comes. Hey, listen, we got guys sitting around. We need some work. We need you to close something, right? So, you know, listen, the salesperson already knows that. So, I mean, just giving them that information is really pushing the salesperson into desperation.
Right.
Because, you know, I know as a salesperson, I feel responsible for the people that are doing the installation work, right? So if they're not working, I don't want anybody to have to be sent home early or anything. I really feel bad when there's not enough work for everybody to keep everybody working, you know, especially around the holidays and that type of thing. So I think a lot of the pressure we get is from internal, even from the company.
Well, Rick, I think that any salesperson can walk around contracting company that's in the slow season and see it's like a morgue. I think we all know that it is. We know that it is slow. And by a owner or a dispatcher or a call coordinator or somebody like that telling them, hey, you better get this call because we are slow, we got to get the crews working, it's kind of an implication that the salesperson doesn't give his full effort every time. It makes it sound like like, hey, I know you dragged your ass for all the rest of the year. Right. Now you got to sell something. We can't go another day without selling something, right?
Right. Exactly.
So what does it say about the level of coaching that must be going on, or the perception of the coaching that's going on inside the company? If nobody's talking to the salesperson, until it gets slow, then what's going on? Also, now you're under the focus. You're under the spotlight, where before nobody even talked to you, and now you're under the spotlight now, huh?
Right. You know, I guess there's good coaches and bad coaches, right? You know, like if Phil Belichick was your sales coach, he'd be encouraging you and telling you how good you could do. You know?
he would tell you that every single game.
Right,
not just
exactly.
Like, in the pressure-packed moment, the pressure-packed moment would be no different from the preseason game. Yeah, I'm sure he would give you the same message during a preseason game as it would be in a Super Bowl. He wouldn't go out to the kicker for the Patriots and say, go out in the field and walk out in the field and say, hey, whatever you do, don't miss this one. Your career is on the line on this one. He would never say something like that to him, right? Because that would just put added pressure where it doesn't need to be. So internal pressure by the staff, I think as a salesperson, you're going to get that. There's no stopping that, right?
It's, right.
Rick, isn't it really how you deal with that pressure that really matters? Could you share your thoughts on
that? It really is. Right. You know, you have to be confident that you're going to handle the call. That's the best way for that call to be handled. You're going to make sure you get the information you have to get. And if the customer is giving you the right signals that they are ready to make a decision that day, then you'll go forward. But if they're not giving you the right information, that they're not going to make a decision that day, you're not going to waste that opportunity and make a presentation before the customer is ready to make a decision.
So, Rick, I think what we're talking about here is really kind of the flow of information, right? If the flow of information, if we're giving information about, like, we're slow or what's happening behind the curtain inside the company, is that really appropriate in our system to be giving information early in the call? There's really two calls here. One call where you're just finding out things. When should we really be how should the flow of information go in the beginning of a call?
Well, you know, I always assume when I go to a call it's going to be a two-visit call, right? The only way I can be convinced it's going to be a one-visit call is by the customer's information that they're giving me. So I want to talk more about what the customer has on their mind and more what the customer's timetable is and the customer's needs are. Then I can make a decision on whether I make a presentation that time or on a second visit.
So, Rick, the flow of information should be the customer giving you the information that sends a signal to you as to whether this is a good time to make a presentation or maybe coming back on a different day. Rick, how important is it to make that presentation at the right time? And if we present at the wrong time, what's likely to happen? Because, I mean, can you tell me, have you any instances of people who were desperate to sell because the internal pressure from the staff, they went ahead and made a presentation and just blew it anyway?
Yeah, and that's happened. I mean, I've seen closing ratios of salespeople, and in speaking with them, what was happening was, and this is kind of when this discussion came up, Joe, I talked to you about this, where I found that the closing ratio was abysmal coming when the times were busy. Because what was happening is they were getting pressure because they needed the work, and instead of following the system, they were going out there and just not listening to what the customers had. The flow of the information was not coming in, and they were making a presentation on the first call every time, all right? And more, you know, shooting the I guess you used to call it the candy cannon, right? They go there, shoot out all that candy, all their information, and try to make the sale on the spot without regard to the flow of information come in. So by not making the presentation at the right time, they were really losing out on opportunities that they would have probably gotten if they were making the presentation at the right time. Right?
I guess, in essence, Rick, that's what selling is all about. Is if we can say, boil it down to what is selling, it's finding out what the correct answer on the test is going to be by learning first, and then taking the test with your presentation, right? To take your final exam would be, I've listened well, I've learned well from the teacher who is the customer, teaching me what is the code of this family, you know, what are these people about? I've connected very well. I found out everything about the family and how many kids and where they live and how long they've been living in this house and what they do for a job. I've done all the homework and the background, and now I got the final exam where I'm going to be on code with these people, give them options that are going to inspire them to make a purchase. But I guess that if we don't get the information first, if we don't find out this information, and this is one of the essential parts about the slow times, we've got plenty of time. That's the ironic part, right? Is that there's so much time to get information But we shorten that time because we're desperate to sell and we want to move forward quickly and get things going. And then we just roll the dice and hope for the best, right? Is Rick, is rolling the dice a good way to sell?
No, it really isn't. It's a good way to waste leads, ruin your closing ratio, and not be successful. So you know, we're not gambling. You know, we're not going out there and playing the odds to see if we're going to be able to close this job, right? So rolling the dice is, you know, maybe good at the casino, but it's not going to be good when you're trying to provide good products and services for your customers.
Well, Rick, we know we've been to Las Vegas last year. Remember, we were last year for on Christmas. We went to Las Vegas, and we rolled the dice.
You have to remind me, Joe.
We didn't do too good rolling the dice here, even in Vegas.
Yeah, we didn't do that good. No.
We lost a little bit of our paycheck there, didn't we?
You know, my wife's in the other room. She might hear. Don't say how much we lost.
I know you were down there.
Half of Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yeah, you were down there till 4 a.m. trying to get your money back. Did you ever get the money back, Rick?
No, I donated a little more. You know, those big buildings there were built on winners, right, Joe?
That's right. So to roll the dice is not, and hope is not a good way of doing it. Presenting at the right time is an important factor in the slow times, and to not give up that urgency. It's important to create urgency, but to not be urgent yourself. Would you say that's an important factor?
Right, it's very important. You know, so again, it goes into if you're going on there rolling the dice and presenting, not gathering information, making a presentation before the customer break. Ready to make a decision. I mean, even you know, you may be in front of somebody who's not even the decision maker, right?
Right.
You know, so I mean, there's just no way that how successful you think it's going to be, Joe, if you go there and show desperation and make a presentation, come to find out this isn't even the person who's ready to make a decision. I mean, how's that going to work out good?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not going to work out at all, Rick. It's not going to work out at all.
There you go.
Hey, Rick, let me ask you a question. During the middle of the call, or sometime during the beginning or middle of the call, we sometimes hear from customers that, you know, I want to get an air conditioning unit, I want to get it put in, and you say something like, we're not making a decision now at this time, right? We're just looking at this. They go, oh yeah, I'm not going to do anything till April. I'm just getting information right now. So the customer's trying to get the flow of information in their direction, right? You've seen that before many times. Now, how can we? I got some ideas on this, but I want to see what your take is on this. How can we turn that around from taking action in April to moving the action to happen in February and March when we need to have it happen?
Right. Just because we're saying that we want to make the presentation at the right time doesn't mean that we can't work at shortening the time when they are going to be ready to make the decision, right? Mm-hmm. So for instance, the ones that I use quite a bit is different financing plans. I'm like, all right, I can see that you would want to wait till April to put in that air conditioning. I can understand that. I just want to make sure that you have heard about what the financing plan we have. I was going into the end of the month, where it's 12 months, no payments, no interest. I just want to make sure that you didn't want to take advantage of that. Because you know what my greatest fear is, Joe?
What's that?
My greatest fear is you're going to hear about that, and then come April, it's not going to be available to you, and then you're going to be upset with me.
Oh, my God. Yeah, if you got that finance, I would definitely want to get the financing for sure. Well, what kind of financing is it, Rick?
Yeah, that's that 12 months, no interest, no payments. So I'm not pushing to do that. I mean, I'd be more than happy to come back in April. What date in April do you want me to come back?
No, I don't want. Hey, if you got the financing now, I want to get it now. We might as well get this done now, then.
All right.
Hey, Rick, I got another one I do too. A customer will say something like, "Oh, just so you know, we're not getting this done till April." And I'll say, "Okay, so just so I know, you're okay with paying more then? You're fine with paying the additional premium for the April installation as opposed to getting this installed as economically as possible right now with our special financing program? So you don't want the special financing." Or the more economical installation, you prefer to pay more and not be able to finance it then, because you must have a lot of money and it's fine with that then, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I use that as well. And also sometimes why is it going to be so much more in April? I'll say, well, you know, we have a lot more business in April, right? We have to have the crews working extra hours and more overtime. And, you know, when Joe, when you have to pay for overtime and the extra expense, who really pays for that? Who do you think pays for that extra expense?
Oh, I guess the installation does, huh?
Right. So, yeah. You know, so if, I don't mind relating to them, but, you know, you can definitely get...
I want to touch base on that, Rick, because it's important to note that you didn't say we're slow. Matter of fact, you could actually add in there. Now, of course, Rick, you know that our crews runners, right now, this is the time of year they run the smoothest. You know, we're running like a top right now, but when it gets to be busy in April, then it's really busy, and sometimes we can't even get installations done for a month or whatever at the time. So you're willing to wait, and you're willing
right.
to
so that's a good, that's that a good point. So what you're doing is you're painting a picture that we're steady, you know. So you know we might be able to get this done by the end of the month. All right, but you're not really saying that they're desperate, but you are showing that. You know, let's face it, it is busier in April, May, June, and it's not most, you know, the best time to buy an umbrella is when it's not raining, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if you wait to buy an umbrella when it's raining, you get wet.
Yeah.
So, you know, planning ahead is a much better way to do it.
Yeah, if you can sneak the candy into the movie that costs 25 cents, it's a lot better than going to the candy counter at the movie theater and spending, you know, $5 or $6 for the same bag of candy, right?
Right. There's other things, too. There's other things you can bring, of course, to the customer, especially if it's an attic system, right? We have to replace this, an air conditioning system in an attic. You can say to them, you know, I have a question for you. Have you ever been up in the attic in April or May? You know, have you ever been up there? What do you think the temperature's like?
Hot, yeah.
All right, it's pretty hot up there. And so now, what do you think the temperature in the attic is maybe this time of year? You know, what do you think it's up there? What do you think it's up there now?
Probably cold, nice and cool.
Yeah. So what do you think, you know, of a work environment, you know, for a quality job? I'm not saying the guys wouldn't do a quality job in April, but what do you think they would do if they were more comfortable up there? Do you think they would maybe just be able to make sure they could, what do you think of the quality of the job? What do you think would be a better chance of getting it done better?
Yeah, I see your point. It'll be a more quality job if I do it now, huh?
Right, yeah. So a lot of people who really think ahead, you know, will really, you know, pick a time where it's, better work conditions for the employee.
Yeah, you can say the work conditions are better. It'll wind up being the focus on quality will be easier to attend to. Although we're going to have to do a quality job either way, you're going to be easier for everybody. It's supposed to be 140. You're kind of discovering, having the customer discover that. Also, having discover that they, you know, you can say something like, "Hey, John, I got a question. I guess you can wait till April. That's a good way of doing it. But let me ask you a question." Why would you want to pay more money in April? I'm just surprised you would want to pay more. Something like that, a question like that. All in the form of questions, not in the form of giving information. And let's make sure we are very clear. We don't want to give information. We want to make sure we are getting information still.
Right.
And so the information we want to get is, John, let me ask you a question. If it was 140 degrees in the attic, would that be a pleasant work environment? No, I guess it wouldn't. Yeah, I mean, if it was now, would it be more pleasant than if it was 140 degrees outside? Yeah, it would. So what do you think we should do? We think we should wait till it's 140 degrees in the attic, or should we wait till it's right now? We should get this done when it's nice and pleasant.
Right. And then
you can mention that financing program and say something like, you know, plus I haven't told you about our special financing. So you're saying you don't want any kind of help with this at all? You don't want any kind of any rebates that are going on right now, which I'm not sure they're going to be going on in April. You're okay to forfeit that rebate, and you're okay to forfeit the special financing then. You're okay with that? Kind of that way. I want to make sure we touch on that. It's kind of like those are all ways, kind of creating scarcity again. You're okay with this paying more money, not getting the financing, possibly not getting the rebates. You're good at waiting and taking a risk on that. More or less, you're going to roll the dice now as a customer.
There you go. Right. You can just when you listen to that show, you can just that sounds right. You can see how that would work with a customer because what you're doing is you're having the customer reveal to themselves how smart it is, and everybody wants to be smart, right? How smart it is to do it when it's a better temperature in the attic.
And so I guess this is a key point. If you're going to deliver information like it's going to be more money in April or it's going to be hotter in the attic, you have to do it in the form of a question and getting that information, not in the form of delivering information. You deliver your information in the form of a question, which people are getting information while they're answering that question, like, oh, I see what he's saying. Like a light bulb goes off of their head. You're looking for the epiphany I didn't realize that. That's kind of what you want the customer to be saying at the end of that kind of a question, I suppose.
Right, exactly. That's powerful stuff. That's good stuff.
Well, Rick, I tell you, there's a lot of guys who stimulate their business by just lowering their prices when it's low. What is the impact of lowering your prices? Does it close more deals if you can lower the price?
No, it just really cheapens the job, right? You know, the mindset that a cheaper job is a better job, I mean, that doesn't work anywhere. I don't know why people would think that works in the HVAC business or the electrical business or the plumbing business.
Well, Rick, like an air conditioning unit or electrical panel or whatever you're doing right now, this time you're a plumbing call and water heater, they're going to last for 25 years or more, hopefully, right? Why would we want to buy the cheapest one that's not going to last even 5 years and get a cheaper price? Because what's going to happen is that if you go cheap on anything, the quality is not going to be right. Have we ever bought anything where the quality was better when the price was cheaper, Rick?
Of course we haven't. And again, that's why it's the power of the system that we use, right, Joe? There's no reason to lower your prices because we always have a low price one in there anyway, right? So, right. So when we go make our presentation, we have the most premium options that can be $20,000 down to something that's more an economy option that could be $7,500, whatever it is. You're already having a cheaper option for them if that's what they're interested in. But, you know, we should get our mindset out of the fact that people buy cheap, because that's what I've learned most in the last couple of years using our system, that people don't buy cheap. People buy quality and value.
Right.
And that's so lowering our price isn't going to do anything to do reflect that, just to have us lose money.
So it's not, so you don't want to change the system and go to some kind of lowball price and only go to one option. It's important to maintain your options, but still offer the best thing, still offer the cheapest thing that you could offer with less service and on the bottom and the most service on the top. The very first thing offers the most service and most warranty. It's important to maintain that option for the customer so you're not just going lowball. Because actually, when we start going low with our prices, the very first thought I get is, what am I going to not do for this person if they're going to go cheaper? If somebody offered me to go out there and coach their team and said, I'll pay you half of what you normally get, and maybe I was desperate for a few bucks, I might do it. But I would also be thinking, what am I not going to provide? If they're not going to provide my 100% of my salary, what am I going to not provide for 50% of my? I'm going to get 50% of my pay. I'm going to provide 50% value. Now I'm trying to figure out what 50% am I going to cut out here, right?
Right.
You have to because like your effort takes too much. You're out there at 10 o'clock at night selling. You can't provide things for half price or for whatever the lower price. And then on top of it, I have a story, Rick. I'm going to share the story. I know I'm talking a lot here, but I remember. I remember a company in New Jersey I had resistance from all their technicians and salespeople about the pricing. They all had the firm belief that prices were too high in their company. They said, "You don't understand, Joe. We're the highest priced company in the world." I think, you know, they were saying how much their stuff was, and I said, "Well, I'll tell you what, guys. If you think that the price really matters that much, are you telling me that you would close more sales if the price was lower?" "Oh, absolutely. We would close everything. I could close every sale if I could lower the price." I said, "Okay, well, let's do this then." I said, "Let me talk to your owner and see if he can give us like one day where everybody in the company can just lower the price to what they want to and see what happens. You make the price. You tell us what's fair. You know, we won't even look at the book anymore. Just for one day, we want to see what happens on that thing." Guess what happened when everybody had the power to lower the price to anything they wanted? Guess how much the company sold for that day? And there's 20 people in this company that were selling on that one day. Guess how much this company averaged, just so you know, this company averaged about 1,200 hours per technician. They did about 22,000 hours a day they were doing with 20 technicians. Guess how much they sold when they could lower the prices? Guess how much the whole company sold?
Well, they probably sold, $6,000 or $7,000 or something like that.
I wish it was that much. They wound up selling $2,300 on that day when they could lower the price than they want. The customers we actually called up some of the customers and asked them, "What happened? The prices, what was it, the price was?" And they go, "I don't know what the hell's going on at your company, but you listen, I want a quality service. I don't want a cheap service, and I don't know what the hell you guys are doing. This guy kept talking about how he wants to go, he can do a cheaper deal for me, he can lower the price." I'm like, "This guy from Mars?" I knew I didn't have the right kind of technician, because I know your company is a quality company. I know you guys charge more money. That's why I hire you. I don't expect any discounts or go cheap on things. And so the customers were overwhelmingly surprised that somebody would lower the price, and it didn't do anything to stimulate more sales. As a matter of fact, it lost sales. And on top of it, Rick, if you do sell a job where you do the red carpet service at a brown bag price, what's the impact on the company's benefit structure, the pay structure, the ability to hire good technicians and salespeople? How's that impact that ability?
Well, obviously something's going to give, right? I mean, you know, if with less money means less of benefits and less support for the company. And, there's no way that you can give red carpet service for the brown bag prices, right? You're going to have to, something's going to have to give in.
So can we unequivocally say that lowering the price during a slow season is just a recipe for disaster and it's nothing we should be doing or nothing we should even be considered doing?
Right, absolutely. You know,
We'll say amen to that, I guess.
Lowering the price any time is bad, but especially in the slow season is even worse.
Yeah, I think the impact is even more severe during slow season, because that impact rumbles throughout the entire company in the ability to even pay our gasoline bill or our insurance and that type of stuff. So we have to make sure we maintain our prices, and it's really a matter of selling more appropriately, like you're saying there, Rick. Now, Rick,
and also being convinced, we all have to be convinced that customers buy quality; they don't buy on price. And so, why would that change just because we're slower?
Well, Rick, on top of it, if you lowered your price every time the slow season came, then you would automatically wind up lowering your quality because you had no money to do the job the right way. So what would happen to the quality of the company? Would it be a consistent quality year-round?
No, it wouldn't. There's no way it could be, right?
Okay, you wind up with a roller coaster of quality. Probably your technicians would be out there sometime about a year later saying, how the hell did we ever install this thing like this? This sucks. This installation sucks. And what happens then is that you wind up with the busy time getting filled up with callbacks because now you are attending to installations that you could have done in a quality fashion when it was slow.
But yeah, I was just going to say that, yeah. When you're putting that out tonight, because I can see that happening, and in the slow time you're doing low-quality work, and then in busy, you're out there fixing and you're doing warranty calls.
Exactly.
Really, it's a recipe for disaster.
Right. Well, Rick, why don't we talk about just a little real quick about the other ways you can create urgency before we wrap it up here. We want to find some other ways that we can create urgency on the call. We did talk about how we create urgency by people waiting. Anything else we can use that with a deadline that we can use? You did mention the financing. Do you want to comment any more on that, or do you think we covered
that? Yeah, the financing is a good way to do it. I mean, sometimes, you know, the company can run certain specials. Like, you know, you have to be careful with that, but you can maybe find something like, you know, with any air system, there's a free high-efficiency air cleaner by a certain day. You know, or your pre-programmable thermostat, or something to make it to create a little bit of urgency with a customer.
Rick, I'm gonna finish up here with we did promise people about some things you could do to stay busy when it was slow that would create some activity when it was slow. And I think this goes back to when the times are busy. Do you have to then look at things, or maybe go back into some of your files? Now, Rick, let's go back in the time machine. And think about this past fall when you were selling some furnaces, and maybe you had quoted some furnace and air conditioning deals, and maybe they only bought the furnace and held off on the air conditioning units. Do you ever see something like that?
Right. Well, sometimes what they'll do is they'll put a furnace in, and they'll put a coil in for future AC, right? Those are ideal calls to call back at a later date.
So if you do a thing where you do a furnace and a coil, but the air conditioning unit isn't hooked up or it's an old air conditioning unit, you could go in there and say, maybe call up those people or even pre-schedule them and say, why don't we go ahead and put this down for February or March so I can go ahead and follow up on getting this air conditioning unit installed. We've got the furnace and coil put in. Or how about this, Rick? If somebody waffled and bought a low-end option, let's say they say, you know what, Rick, I think I'd like to get the furnace and AC done, but we're going to hold off till next year on the AC unit. That would be a great opportunity to go ahead and schedule that call right now. So you're not waiting for a call from the customer. One of the cardinal sins that salespeople do is they go on a call and they see the customer kind of waffling between a low option or better option, and instead of executing the call and saying, let me go ahead and schedule that call for March right now. So let's say it's October. If a customer says, I want to get air conditioning, schedule the call, baby, because this is what we need to do. We can't be sitting there waiting for a call. What's going to happen? You know what's going to happen? That guy's going to wait till June or July when you're already swamped to the gills. You can't even handle any more calls. And now you're not going to be able to even get that customer. You don't going to be able to do a quality job. He's going to wind up going with somebody else on that call because we didn't even attend to the date to install it. But have you seen dead-ass salespeople do that where they don't, that they hear what customers say, something like that?
And other situations that have arisen, you know, you go out and you make a presentation and the customer decides to change the furnace and the air conditioning unit and the coil, but to leave me a 15 or 20 year old air conditioning unit, saying, you know what, I can afford this now, but I'm going to change that it next year. We want to make sure. What I do is I have a BlackBerry. I go right to a date in the future, and I actually put the call in that date, and I write on there, you know, change furnace and coil, wants to change condensing unit. So that's how it keeps me organized to make sure that I know who to call and when to call and what I'm going to call them about. Right. So those are situations that you can, increase sales in times that are down.
Well, I think there's two things you could do. One is to offer to go ahead and just put in a schedule on the company schedule, and then also for yourself too. But also, if he says no, I'll call you, then he can say something like, "Well, let me at least do this. Let me go ahead and just give you a call to remind you, so you don't forget about it. Because I want you to pay more money in the summer. I want you to get this thing done when it's more economical during our normal time of year in February and March. I want to get that done for you then. And so basically, you're at least put them on the tickler, like you say, the tickler file to make sure you call them back. I think the first effort would be to get them on that schedule. Don't even do a follow-up. Just get that damn thing on there. And then also say, I'll call you a couple weeks ahead of time and remind you about the call maybe, probably what you're doing there. And I would say that if not, at least give you the call. Let me go ahead and give it a call. So you should be having activity. For every call that you're going on, if there's other things that could be sold that want to be sold in the future, find out and book those calls in the future for yourself. And that's an important factor. I think that's one thing you could all do. It would keep ourselves busy year-round if we did that.
Right. I agree.
That's kind of what I call an internal referral. Somebody who already bought something who wants to buy more, that's an automatic sale because they already wrote a check to your company. It's much easier to write a second one or a third one. If I'm a buyer of Nordstrom's pants, I want to buy shirts at Nordstrom's too, and I want to buy shoes at Nordstrom's. I'm going to buy everything at Nordstrom. I'm not going to just buy the one thing. So that's why I can organize myself. When people buy things, it's kind of like I'm organizing myself knowing where I bought all my mechanical equipment from. I don't want to have to buy it from different places, right?
Right, exactly. Because, you know, they don't have to remember who warrantied what. All right, that's a warranty for that. That's warranty for this. Who's responsible for this? I don't want to ruin the warranty on this because somebody else worked on it. All those issues come in. So they really want to deal with the one contract and make sure that we're that one contract.
And another thing you could do, too, in a second level, so the first thing is make sure you're when you're busy, make sure you're pushing future opportunities and scheduling future opportunities for yourself when it isn't so busy. You know it's not going to be busy. The second thing I think you can do is make sure that every single call you go on, you let customers know that it's important that we get referrals, that referrals are an important part of what we do. And if you can tell them that early on each call you go on, let everybody at least know that. If you could think of anybody, let us know. Like, hey, you know what? The source of our business, you know, we're doing good because of customers like you who tell other customers about us. Now, if you set that up early and you can even ask people, can you think of anybody? No, I can't think of anybody right now. Okay, that's fine. If you do, let me know, okay? Now, if you were to call back next spring with that same kind of customer when it was slow and you weren't doing anything, it would be a natural thing. You'd say, hey, Bob, I just want to say, how did it go with the installation we did in October? Were you happy with everything? Oh, yeah, I did great, Rick. It was a good job. Well, remember I talked to you about the referrals and how important it was? You know, we really could use your help in finding other customers. Have you thought of anybody since I talked to you? Again, kind of prompting them again. There's a car salesman named Joe Girard who was famous in Detroit, the guy who worked in Michigan, who he built up a whole business on that kind of follow-up. Of course, he used postcards and everything like that, which I would also recommend a postcard type of follow-up system or a note follow-up system, something you can do. Keep yourself busy. Because, Rick, you do have a luxury. I'll say that to admit. You have a luxury of a great marketing system, your company. If you weren't that lucky, you'd have to take action yourself, wouldn't you?
Right. I would, definitely.
And would you recommend that's an activity to market yourself, or is that something that's a marketing department's problem, would you say?
Oh, no. It's really a salesman's responsibility to do to get as many pearls as it can get, right? Because those are our best leads. And, you know, it's really in our own best interest because those are the easiest leads, right? You already have a customer who's already happy. He's been referred by somebody else. And those are really primo calls to want to be able to handle.
Right, Rick. Well, Rick, I think we're going to wrap it up with this one final thought. And that is, if you used up all your referral tactics and techniques and you used up all your follow-up techniques that we just talked about, one thing you can definitely do when it's slow, I mean, let's just the bottom line. When it gets slow or the slow season starts to come upon us, a salesperson can either put their head in the sand and hope for the slow time to blow over until it gets busy. What's the best activity a salesperson should do when there's actually absolutely he's done everything else he can do, and now what should he do at this point? Should he just sit around and go mope at home, or what should he do?
Well, I would say self-improvement, right?
So how do you look at self-improvement? I know you come to our sales bar every week, and this is like your self-improvement moment, right? You get to come here and chat with me, and we talk about how to improve our sales and our mindset, keep our minds sharp. Any other ways you can think of that salespeople can keep their sales skills? I mean, what kind of activities do you think would be important for a salesperson engage in?
Right, there's things they can do amongst themselves. They're working role-playing. They can talk to other salespeople and find out what's working for them and what they can work on together. They can attend seminars like the Total Immersion Seminar, that type of thing. They can do continuing.
Really, like the one we're having in Austin, Texas.
There you go.
And if you click on the Total Immersion 2009 button on our website, that it would come right up.
That's right. Exactly what would happen.
That's great advice, Rick. Yeah, it's great. So, attending seminars. You know what? Even if you don't attend seminars, I would say if you're a salesperson who is not doing anything, you should be on our website constantly scouring that website for information and just watching video after video about how I can improve my skills, because that's so low. I mean, for $24 a month, somebody could just watch that and really get a lot of information like these hour sales powers. We have over, I counted, we have over 67 hours of sales powers up there, as well as about 135 hours of audio material that is up there, and then downloads. I won't even start with all the e-books and stuff we put up there. So there's so much information that a salesperson at least should log in. If you don't do that, go out and buy a book on sales and maybe read a few chapters about how to close a deal and challenge yourself and to improve your selling skills. Role-playing, reading a book, go on the website, attend a seminar, all good things to do when it's slow. And you can't sit still, because if you sit still, you're not a moving target anymore. And you know it's much harder to hit a moving target, and you don't want your boss to have to find you under that rock. You want to make sure that you are taking action to improve, so your boss is at least respectful of the fact that you're trying, right? I mean, it's much harder to fire somebody when they're putting in 100% effort to improve, isn't it, Rick?
Right. You know what they say, if you're not improving, you're regressing, right? So right. We always have to make sure we're moving forward.
And this is a time of year I think we have a lot of traditional turnover with salespeople and service technicians, because they're not trying. They kind of go into a shell and say, I'm waiting for something to come to me. Rick, are you ever going to be successful waiting for something to come to you?
No, you know what they say, just do it. You have to go out there and you have to get it.
And I think we're going to end on that thought, Rick. Rick, thank you for joining us today and tonight on the Hour of Sales Power. Shit, tonight, it's not today. We had a great time talking with you. This is a great, actually, it turned into be a very nice subject. I really enjoyed the role plays and the things we did tonight. And I do want to remind everybody that, as Rick said, we are having a series of Total Immersion seminars coming up this spring. We have one in March, April, and May. There's going to be the first one in Austin, Texas. Now, that one is already about 75% full on that Austin, Texas seminar. So if you want to get into Austin, Texas, which is a really nice city, Austin's a really cool city to go to with a lot of entertainment and things like that, you can go to the Austin, Texas seminar. That will be in March, and we have one in April in Atlanta, Georgia. It'll be in April, and I hope you can attend in Atlanta. We are always traditionally fill up Atlanta, so I would say get yourself into that soon. And we're going to be right here in Los Angeles in May. So if any of you want to come out to California and have Uncle Joe show you around the Los Angeles Strip out here and show you what the Sunset Strip is like and all the fun activities we have out here on the beach and the sun and fun, well, you're always welcome to join us out here, and we'll take you for a tour. So
I can vouch for that, Joe. I mean, me and my wife went up to Los Angeles. She showed us around. You provide a pretty good tour, Joe.
Well, thanks a lot, Rick. All right, from all of us to all of you, thank you and good night, and we'll see you next week on the Internet.